Welcome to Amethyst Dynasty. I'm your host, Savoir Faire, coming to you live and on the air, blessing you with the fire you need to hear. So, lend me your ear. And good evening to my listeners. Today is a topsy-turvy-worvy, terrifically tenacious Thursday, March 26, 2020. And my goodness, my gosh, my golly bee, we have been hit with all kinds of news today. I'm sure by now everyone's heard of the interesting viral news that hospitals are now discussing do not resuscitate orders for this current situation we're in. Before I jump into the article that I have for you, let's look at some live numbers. I was put on today to a live novel coronavirus 2019 page that updates continuously, like second by second, just about. And you can find this at ncov2019.live. I'd still look at the BNO as well, but a few seconds ago it updated to show that there are globally 534,386 confirmed coronavirus cases. 24,072 people have perished. 16,128 people at the moment are in serious condition, and there is a total of 119,987 people that have recovered since this began. And the total amount of countries right now infected are 190 out of 195. This is like your worst nightmare come true. There's a game, an app that I heard about it, and so I downloaded it and I wanted to see what it was like. And literally you start your own pandemic on the game, and it shows you how fast something can spread, how viruses can be tweaked to spread faster. The game is insidious. Let's just say I deleted it. I couldn't finish it. It made me feel awful and weird and all kinds of wrong. And I just knew whoever created it was someone that isn't a good person. In the U.S., there are a total of 85,327 cases. It is up 25.11% as of a few seconds ago. There have been 1,305 deaths. It is an increase of 25.96%. And there have been 252 people that have recovered in the U.S. as of late. I really like this app. I do encourage you to look for yourself. I'm going to go to the USA. It does allow you to go not just by country, not just globally, but by nation, etc., etc. The top 10... look like it's wow, still just about the same, but these numbers, my goodness. New York is at 38,977 cases, up 18.23%, with 469 deaths, and that's up 27.10%. There have been zero recoveries. New Jersey, 6,876 cases, up 56.20%. 81 deaths, up 30.64%. No recoveries yet. Excuse me. California is at 4,002 cases, up 33.48%, with 82 deaths, up 26.15%, and one recovery. Washington has 3,207 cases, up 23.91%, 147 deaths, that is up 11.36%, and 19 recoveries. Michigan, 2,856 cases, up 24.44%, 60 deaths, up 39.53%. Illinois has 2,538 cases, up 36.8%, with 26 deaths, and that is an increase of 36.84%, and 2 recoveries. Florida, 2,484 cases, up 25.64%, 29 deaths, that is up 26.8%. Massachusetts has 2,417 cases, up 31.5%, with 25 deaths, up 66.66%. Louisiana has 2,305 cases, up 28.41%, 83 deaths, up 27.69%. Pennsylvania has 1,687 cases, up 49.68%, 16 deaths, 45.45% increase. Texas is following with 1,655 cases and 35.43% increase, with 23 deaths, up 27.77%. Georgia is closely following at 1,643 cases, up 18.45%, 56 deaths, up 19.14%. Again, this is found on ncove2019.live. Updates every few seconds. Real live time visual of the numbers. Also, I go to bnonews.com is what I've been using, but this is my first time using this, and I'm probably going to continue since they do the live updates. It's better than waiting all day for new numbers. You'd want to see what's happening around you. So today, I had quite a few things to discuss. I tried to do this broadcast like 3 times. I had to take a break. Something was going on where I couldn't record with my headphones. So if it sounds a little echoey, forgive me. But anywho, I'm trying. This particular article came out at the Washington Post last night around 9:50 p.m. It kind of has gone viral via Facebook. That's how I saw it. So when I pulled it up, I actually read it, and I'm seeing that this isn't the only article that's discussing this. This is a real thing. The Washington Post is pretty credible for the most part. So I figured it's something to watch. You'll find this in the coronavirus health section. Hospitals consider universal do not resuscitate orders for coronavirus patients. Worry that all hands responses may expose doctors and nurses to infection prompts debate about prioritizing the survival of the many over the one. Now, there is a video in this article. If you pull it up yourself, they interviewed some doctors across the country regarding what's going on with the shortages of medical equipment and the supplies and how that's affecting them being able to save lives. It is worth listening to. This was written by Ariana Yuzhongsha. Hospitals on the front lines of the pandemic are engaged in a heated private debate over a calculation few have encountered in their lifetimes: how to weigh the save-at-all-cost approach to resuscitating a dying patient against the real danger of exposing doctors and nurses to the contagion of coronavirus. The conversations are driven by the realization that the risk to staff amid dwindling stores of protective equipment, such as masks, gowns, and gloves, may be too great to justify the conventional response when a patient codes and their heart or breathing stops. Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago has been discussing a do not resuscitate policy for infected patients, regardless of the wishes of the patient or their family members. A wrenching decision to prioritize the lives of the many over the one. Richard Wondering, one of Northwestern's intensive care medical directors, said hospital administrators would have to ask Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker for help in clarifying state law and whether it permits the policy shift. Quote, "It's a major concern for everyone," he said. "This is something about which we have had lots of communication with families, and I think they are very aware of the grave circumstances." End quote. Officials at George Washington University Hospital in the district say they have had similar conversations, but for now will continue to resuscitate COVID-19 patients using modified procedures, such as putting plastic sheeting over the patient to create a barrier. The University of Washington Medical Center. One of the country's major hotspots for infections is dealing with the problem by severely limiting the number of responders to a contagious patient in cardiac or respiratory arrest. Several large hospital systems, Atrium Health in the Carolinas, Geisinger in Pennsylvania, and regional Kaiser Permanente networks, are looking at guidelines that would allow doctors to override the wishes of the coronavirus patient or family members on a case-by-case basis due to the risk to doctors and nurses or a shortage of protective equipment, say ethicists and doctors involved in these conversations. But they would stop short of imposing a do not resuscitate order on every coronavirus patient. The companies declined to comment. Lewis Kaplan, president of the Society of Critical Care Medicine and a University of Pennsylvania surgeon, described how colleagues at different institutions are sharing draft policies to address their changed reality. "We are now on crisis footing," he said. "What you take as first come, first served, no holds barred, everything that is available should be applied medicine is not where we are. We are now facing some difficult choices in how we apply medical resources, including staff." The new protocols are part of a larger rationing of life-saving procedures and equipment, including ventilators. That is quickly becoming a reality here in other parts of the world battling the virus. The concerns are not just about healthcare workers getting sick, but also about them potentially carrying the virus to other patients in the hospital. R. Alta Charo, a University of Wisconsin-Madison bioethicist, said that while the idea of withholding treatment may be unsettling, especially in a country as wealthy as ours, it is pragmatic. "It doesn't help anybody if our doctors and nurses are failed by this virus and not able to care for us," she said. "The code process is one that puts them at an enhanced risk." Wondering said all of the most critically ill patients in the 12 days since they had their first coronavirus case have experienced steady declines rather than a sudden crash. That allowed medical staff to talk with families about the risk to workers and how having to put on protective gear delays a response and decreases the chance of saving someone's life. "A consequence of those conversations," he said, "is that many family members are making the difficult choice to sign do not resuscitate orders, code blue. Healthcare providers are bound by oath and in some states by law to do everything they can within the bounds of modern technology to save a patient's life, absent an order such as a DNR to do otherwise. But as cases mount amid a national shortage of personal protective equipment, or PPE, hospitals are beginning to implement emergency measures that will either minimize, modify, or completely stop the use of certain procedures on patients with COVID-19. Some of the most anxiety-provoking minutes in a healthcare worker's day involve participating in procedures that send virus-laced droplets from a patient's airways all over the room. These include endoscopies, bronchoscopies, and other procedures in which tubes or cameras are sent down the throat and are routine in ICUs to look for bleeds or examine the inside of the lungs. Changing or eliminating those protocols is likely to decrease some patients' chances for survival. But hospital administrators and doctors say the measures are necessary to save the most lives. The most extremes of the extreme of these situations is when a patient in hospital lingo codes. When a code blue alarm is activated, it signals that a patient has gone into cardiopulmonary arrest, and typically all available personnel, usually somewhere around 8, but sometimes as many as 30 people, rush into the room to begin life-saving procedures without which the person would almost certainly perish. Quote, "It's extremely dangerous in terms of infection risk because it involves multiple bodily fluids," explained one ICU physician in the Midwest who did not want her name used because she was not authorized to speak by her hospital. Fred Wisey, an ICU nurse in Muskegon, Michigan, described it like a storm. "A team of nurses and doctors, trading off every 2 minutes, begin the chest compressions that are part of cardiopulmonary resuscitation, or CPR. Someone punctures the neck and arms to access blood vessels to put in new intravenous lines. Someone else grabs a crash cart stocked with a variety of life-saving medications and equipment ranging from epinephrine injectors to a defibrillator to restart the heart. As soon as possible, a breathing tube will be placed down the throat and the person will be hooked up to a mechanical ventilator. Even in the best of times, a patient who is coding presents an ethical maze. There's often no clear-cut answer for when there's still hope and when it's too late. In the process, heaps of protective equipment is used, often many dozens of gloves, gowns, masks, and more." Bruno Pentanal, chief medical officer at George Washington University Hospital, said the hospital has had a lot of discussion about how and whether to resuscitate COVID-19 patients who are coding. Quote, "From a safety perspective, you can make the argument that the safest thing to do is nothing," he said. "I don't believe that is necessarily the right approach, so we have decided not to go in that direction. What we are doing is what can be done safely," end quote. However, he said, the decision comes down to a hospital's resources and every hospital, quote, has to assess and evaluate for themselves. It's still early in the outbreak in the Washington area, and GW still has sufficient equipment and manpower. Pentanal said he cannot rule out a change in protocol if things get worse. GW's procedure for responding to coronavirus patients who are coding includes using a machine called a Lucas device, which looks like a bumper to deliver chest compressions. But the hospital has only two. If the Lucas devices are not readily accessible, doctors and nurses have been told to drape plastic sheeting, the 7 mil kind available at Home Depot or Lowe's, over the patient's body to minimize the spread of droplets and then proceed with chest compressions. Because the patient would presumably be on a ventilator, there is no risk of suffocation. In Washington State, which had the nation's first COVID-19 cases, UW Medicine's chief medical officer, Tim Dellett, said the decision to send in fewer doctors and nurses to help a coding patient is about minimizing use of PPE as we go into the surge. He said the hospital is monitoring healthcare workers' health closely. So far, the percentage of infections among those tested is less than in the general population, which he hopes means their precautions are working. It is a nightmare. Bioethicist Scott Halpern at the University of Pennsylvania is the author of one widely circulated model guideline being considered by many hospitals. In an interview, he said a blanket stop to resuscitations for infected patients is too draconian and may end up sacrificing a young person who is otherwise in good health. However, healthcare workers and limited protective equipment cannot be ignored. Quote, if we risk their well-being in service of one patient, we detract from the care of future patients, which is unfair, end quote, he said. Halpern's document calls for two physicians, the one directly taking care of a patient, and one who is not, to sign off on do not resuscitate orders. They must document the reason for the decision and the family must be informed but does not have to agree. Wisey, the Michigan ICU nurse, said his own hospital has been thinking about these issues for years, but still is unprepared. Quote, they made us do all kinds of mandatory education and fittings and made it sound like they are prepared, he said. But when it hits the fan, they do not have the supplies, so the plans they had in place aren't working, end quote. Over the weekend, Wisey said a suspected COVID-19 patient was rushed in and put into a negative pressure room to prevent the virus spread. In normal times, a nurse in full hazmat type gear would sit with the patient to care for him, but there was little equipment to spare, so Wisey had to monitor him from the outside. Before he walked inside, he said he would have to put on a face shield, N95 mask, and other equipment and slather. Antibacterial foam on his bald head as the hospital did not have any more head coverings. Only one powered air purifying respirator, or PAPR, was available for the room and others nearby that could be used when performing an invasive procedure, but it was 150 feet away. While he said his hospital's policy still called for a full response to patients whose heart or breathing stopped, he worried any efforts would be challenging if not futile. Quote, by the time you get all gowned up and double gloved, the patient is going to be dead, he said. We are going to be coding dead people. It is a nightmare, end quote. And that, you all, was the Washington Post article regarding this new situation regarding do not resuscitate towards COVID-19 patients. But I wonder if it'll only be COVID-19 patients. What about someone that gets into an accident or has a heart attack or has a stroke or is elderly or maybe isn't in the tip-top ship of health? Or doesn't have any money for insurance, or, you know, is homeless, or maybe looked at as the scum of the bottom of society. What about the people with leukemia and other forms of cancer that can't have the surgeries that could help them or could find some help for them or a cure for their disease? What about them? It's not just COVID-19. We still have the everyday life situations that were unfolding already. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth. Are we not in perilous times? I do have more articles, but I feel like this one was a little heavy, and I'd like to just pass my opinion about it. The fact that this virus was so-called discovered in December in China and in January when the U.S. was warned and it was brushed off like it's just the flu. It's just like the flu. It's a hoax. It's a political ploy. It's anarchy. Up until now, almost the end of March, and already the U.S. is at almost 100,000 cases, and 1,000 people have died so far. And what is this, week two for us in quarantine? Should really unnerve you to really begin to question, is this just a virus? Or is it a plague? Never in my few years of life here on Earth would I have ever imagined that not only myself, but the children that I've brought into the world would be in such danger. Because you see, it's not just about you as an individual. If you have a family, if you have small kids, if you're pregnant right now, the anxiety level of the fact that your fellow human being could literally be a deadly threat to you or to your little ones can really unsettle the mind if you aren't sound and assured in what is and what time it is. I think the time for partying is done. I think that we all should be a little bit more mournful, because this isn't even peaked. This has not peaked. They only started testing, what, 2 weeks ago? And 2 weeks ago, it went from what, like 15, maybe a little more, to now it's literally almost 100,000 cases. The U.S. surpassed China and Italy today in cases. People are losing their lives. And unfortunately, more will. And I hope this doesn't sound biased, but being a New Orleanian, a Louisianan born and raised, my heart aches for the people in my hometown. To say that we are what the Crescent City, a small bowl of people, but so large in regards to tourism and people wanting historically to visit, to eat, to dwell, to be around people of the city. To see how vast the spreading is, to know of at least 5 people who have had it, or know of people who, have family members that have it, are fighting, or have passed away. Musical DJs that you grew up to, that I grew up to, that we grew up to in the city, dying from coronavirus, knowing that they're healthcare workers that are getting the virus, passing away because they don't have a freaking mask. People are literally reusing their mask over and over and over. That is sad. That is a disgrace, a travesty, a great insidious Twilight Zone. Run amok with a bureaucracy red tape that isn't doing what it's supposed to. I'm tired of hearing what people are going to do. I like to see it done. There's no reason there aren't enough ventilators. There's no reason there aren't enough personal protective gear for people. There's no reason that people are hungry or struggling because they've lost their job and now they've got to wait weeks. Where are people's tax money at? Like, do something for God's sake. Release some of the tension. It's almost like we're being squeezed, backed all the way into a small, tiny corner. as the room is getting smaller and smaller and smaller, suffocating the very joy of life if you're not safe. I guess I will say safe with regards to your thoughts and how you handle pressure. This could really overwhelm you. I'm really disappointed in what I'm seeing. So every few days I'm taking mental breaks and just meditating and praying and seeking God and being quiet when need be. Because this isn't gonna stop, it's gonna keep going. Don't be a fool to think that in 2 weeks this is gonna be gone. It is a global health pandemic. And it doesn't look like it's slowing down anytime soon right now. I'll be back with some more, y'all. To think that we've really gotten to the point where they're discussing who lives, who dies, survival of the fittest, is a sad and perilous moment. Are you paying attention? Or are you just trying to be entertained? I could choose to entertain you, make you feel all good and sad, forget about what's going on. But is that really what you need? Is that really gonna help you when the next 2 weeks come and the numbers are still climbing? And God forbid someone close to you or someone you know gets this and doesn't make it through. May God have mercy upon us right now. Because this is scary. I'm not about to lie and pretend like I'm not immune to feeling the effects of what's happening around us and in our land right now and around the world. Until next time, be vigilant, be mindful, and look up. And again, you're listening to Amethyst Dynasty. I'm your host, Savoir Fair, coming to you live and on the air, blessing you with the fire you need to hear. So, lend me your ears.